WPFW, Washington.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Raucous Caucus.
And good evening and welcome to the Eric and Kathy Show. Oh, no, wait a minute. That's our guest.
That's right.
Yeah, a couple of our guests here. Welcome, welcome.
Those are the people with real talent in here.
Talent and intelligence and sagacity. Yeah. And I love that word, sagacity, but you know that. Anyway, this is the Raucous Caucus, and I am Terry D. Kester, and to my left sits my good buddy...
Mark Levine. And, Garland Nixon. I knew that. There's an empty seat next to me right now.
Yeah, and to our far right is an empty chair.
Yeah, right.
What can I tell you?
Everything's normal.
I heard that Mark was eaten by a fox. I don't know exactly what happened, what that all means, you know. But now Mark is on his way. He'll be here shortly. And,
I think he's at a Tea Party movement rally or something.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. We miss him terribly, and we're going to weep here soon, but not right at the moment.
Right.
Anyway, Garland and I are more than happy to carry on the show of the Raucous Caucus. By the way, I just want to point out from the very top of the show that you can be in touch with us at two specific places, and we'd appreciate it if you do. One is raucouscaucus@gmail.com. Drop us an email. Let us know what you think. And... let us know what you don't think. I mean, you could be a Tea Party, or
you're
know,
right. And send us a blank email. That'll work. It doesn't matter. We know you're supporting us.
Yeah,
that's all.
Right. And the other place is WPFW Raucous Caucus on Facebook. So you can reach us in either place, and you can engage us in the conversation.
Oh, there's one more place. They can come right here, right now.
Excuse me. No faith. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. They can come right here, and they can see Gladys, and they can see Garland, and they can see me, and they can't see Mark, but that's okay. And but you can come right down here to the Ben's Next Door.
Yep.
12th and U. That's next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. It's a great place, great food, great people. And every Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, here we are, making as much raucous cauci as we possibly can. Here's David. So if we have David, I guess we don't need Mark at all. Okay, right. Welcome, David. Come on in, David. All right. Anyway, we're going to begin... right in here, we're going to jump right into the topic, and the topic is of tonight, better one of my pet peeves, frankly. You probably saw the article in the Washington Post this Sunday, big front page article, about Tea Partiers and going down to Colonial Williamsburg and getting all psyched up about what they consider the history and what they consider patriotism down there in Colonial Williamsburg, and specifically in watching the enactments called the Revolutionary City. Well, as most of you know, I had the privilege of being the scriptwriter for the Revolutionary City. Believe me, I did a lot of study of history, and they don't know diddly squat. You know, I mean, they're so far off on what the history of America is, it's absolutely embarrassing. This goes all the way from Glenn Beck up and down, you know. They simply do not know the history of America. They are selective to the nth degree. So we're going to discuss what we know, and I mean this seriously. I mean, I have been studying this for years. I worked at Mount Vernon, and I worked... At Colonial Williamsburg. I wrote the Revolutionary City script and been studying history for years. And, of course, Garland and Mark and I also have all been involved in studying history in every aspect of it. So we're going to throw out a whole lot of information to you that hopefully you can spread around, because, I mean, the American public is essentially ignorant of this, too. I mean, they really honestly are, because the first point I want to make, and I want you to understand what I learned the hard way when I was working for Mount Vernon and Colonial Williamsburg, and I mean no disrespect, but history in this country is a commodity. It's commercial. If you can't sell it, it ain't history. It's that simple. And as far as I'm concerned, that goes all the way up to Dave McCullough and other historians who just write all this mushy stuff, you know, about how everything was.
Well, and to be honest, Terry, and when I was growing up, even my textbooks.
Oh,
the textbooks in school painted rosy picture. Everybody was walking around in powdered wigs and, you know, when really, what was it, like 1-2% of the people were wealthy and could afford, like, powdered wigs and everyone else was starving.
Yeah,
but my textbooks when I was growing up made things look really nice and comfortable in America back in the Revolutionary War days.
Well, I hope that we get, you know, people that are listening to this, and I know there's millions, Well, I hope there's a few.
Billions, I say.
Billions, anyway.
Don't shortchange us.
Yeah, right. But I hope they take some of this information and start responding to, and I mean by that politicians. One of my pet peeves, Garland, is anytime I hear the founders.
Right.
The founding fathers. I mean, I am, A, tired of it. Well, I don't care if Obama says it or Palin says it. You know, the same reaction I have, one, it's a cliche, you know. Two, it's a meaningless statement because, you know, it sort of implies that the founding fathers, those guys, those patriarchs, I mean, how arrogant can we get, founding fathers? I mean, what? The women didn't count? I mean, no.
Well, it, actually, they
but
didn't.
But they didn't.
If
right.
you want to
so
be honest, they didn't
right.
count.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the idea that there's this somehow, as you said, this group of powdered wigged gentlemen who are unified in purpose and in goal and in agenda.
Did you mention faultless? Faultless.
What?
Faultless. Without fault.
Oh, without fault, yes.
That anything that if you can say, if the founding fathers said it, then it was right. How dare you should ever question anything that was written. I don't care if they wrote something horrible. If the founding fathers wrote it, well, we ignore the horrible stuff.
Yeah, but the point is they weren't in agreement on anything. You know, they were the same. You know, it really was probably more divisive then than it is today.
They were kind of like an early Raucous Caucus, if you think about it.
No, like an early Congress.
Version of us.
No. We have intelligence and sagacity. You know. But, you know, they're more like the Republicans and the Democrats are today in terms of division.
So nothing's changed.
It hasn't. You know,
except the powdered wigs.
Except for the powdered wigs. And as far as I know, that Mark Levine still wears a powdered wig, but we don't want to get into that right now. Come on in. Make yourself at home.
U Street. You better hurry up and get in here because the seats are going fast.
Yeah. Okay, come on right in here. We're talking about American history and we're correcting the mythology. I'm going to give you one more of my pet peeves and then, Garland, I want to hear some of yours. You know, I hate to tell you this, but again, having studied it and having worked for these organizations, it was never the intention of the founding patriarch guys, you know, to make this country a country that was about equality for the middle class, let alone the poor and the impoverished. It was not about creating a country that where everything was going to be equal and just and that everybody would have equal participation and equal access. That was not the agenda. That's maybe the one thing those guys, those men, agreed upon.
As if it is now. Let's not fool ourselves.
You may have noticed that, Garland. And I'm going to digress for a moment. If you want proof of this, of the inequality now, which was instituted then, that's when the inequality was instituted in this country. It's still part of the same system. But if you want proof of this, just read the Washington Post today's the style section about this dental health fair. 100 million Americans have no dental health insurance coverage or access at all. 100 million. It's like saying to the citizens of America, you know, you don't get any kind of health coverage for your right foot. You know, I mean, to ignore dental care is criminal. 100 million. But read that article. If it doesn't bring you to tears, I don't know what will. I mean, it's really moving. It's really upsetting. It gives you a vivid picture of what the country is in terms of economic injustice. And that economic injustice was built into the system. There were exceptions to the rule, Thomas Jefferson being primarily one of them. Yes, he was a slaveholder, but still. But his comment about the founding fathers was that in 20 years, you're going to look back and realize this is a group of barbarians. That's Thomas Jefferson's
That's probably
comment.
The wisest statement he ever made.
Right. He says, and when you look at that Constitution, you're sure as heck going to want to change that. Uh-oh, close the doors, close the doors.
Speaking of barbarians, Thundar has just walked through the door.
Did I trash in the founding fathers?
Well, not yet.
I haven't had
the opportunity to trash the founding fathers yet.
But God, I'm listening to the radio.
I'm in the batter's box, buddy. I'm in the batter's box.
You may have gathered.
You're just trashing everybody here.
You may have gathered it. Somehow, we've got this wonderful audience here. We've got great people here. You know, we're glad you're here. More people come on down 12th. Some other Mark Levine got in. I don't know. I thought we had that covered.
And suddenly it became interesting.
Right. I don't think so, but it's good
That'll
to see
teach
you.
Not to have security at the door.
Yeah, right.
Well, so let me say a bit
about go ahead.
The whole Founding Fathers.
Let Mark catch his breath.
For one second, I'm not going to say that these weren't brilliant individuals. Because if you read this stuff, it reads very well, even today. It reads very well. You know, Paul Robeson.
You want a copy? I got one right here.
In fact, we're not talking about the Constitution. Stay tuned.
Declaration of Independence? Got that, too.
We're not talking about the Declaration of Independence. Stay tuned.
We got to get somebody that can read.
We'll need an
audience member because we got to find somebody that can read. At any rate, Paul Robeson said the problem wasn't that with our laws and our rules. The problem was that we never followed them. So, to some extent, what they wrote was a lot of what they wrote was beautiful. But if you look behind it, 5 or 6% of the people could vote? Only
6%.
Yeah, only
max.
Landowner male white male landowners only could vote. What happened was this, and this is what we don't really discuss a lot. In England at the time, the culture, the old medieval English culture, was that power came from birth. Where you were born,
yes.
Your position came.
I mean, obviously,
from
a king.
Birth.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, if you were in the Navy and you moved up, you didn't move up to be an admiral because you were the wisest, smartest, or took tests. It was because you were the son of whoever. That was the English way, and that was the way the Founding Fathers saw, and they brought that culture here. Now, I'll give them credit; they really put some good stuff into the Constitution.
They fought it. A lot of people didn't want it.
People walked out.
All right.
Anyway, let's get a Mark.
Enough
over here.
With this thing.
We need some
because
we
were very different founding fathers.
Exactly. The people already made that point.
So let's just divide up the thing.
Ben Franklin
because
on the
Jefferson
left.
Jefferson and Madison were on one side.
And Benjamin Franklin.
And then you had some real strong slave owner. I mean, not that Jefferson didn't own slaves. Of course he did. But he at least was conflicted about it, right?
At least he was conflicted about it.
Look. I agree with Paul Robeson. I agree with you, Garland. The words are themselves meaningful, even though the Founding Fathers didn't live those words. Even though when they said all men are created equal, they didn't include non-white,
well, they meant
Christian,
men.
Non-property owners, and they certainly didn't include women.
Right.
But those words would come back to haunt them, and later on, people would cite those words. I mean, slaves would cite those words. Women would cite at least the idea of all people being created equal. And so before we diss them too badly, admitting all their imperfections, let's recognize that some of their ideas, which were very much the Enlightenment ideas, and they weren't just in America, they were in France and other countries, this whole idea in the late 18th century that actually kings don't rule. And don't rule by divine right, and that it's only with consent of the governed. This whole idea of rebirthing the democracy that came back from the Greeks and the Bible and way back when, you got to give them a little bit of credit because they put all that in a document that later could be cited by people who want full equality.
Well, just to clarify a little bit, we're not trying to diss them, but we are saying this simplicity that is embraced by the American public, that is used by the politicians of America, and certainly used and being misused by the Tea Partiers, this grouping and this simplicity that the Founding Fathers were all this wonderful unified group of people.
They were hardly unified.
They were
that's
hardly
for sure.
unified. To give you a perfect example, and it's very interesting because they also, you know, the Tea Partiers and all that claim that there's a sort of original vision of America that they're going back to. That's not true either. I mean, there's varying visions.
Well, I don't like the original vision of America, if you really want the truth.
You know, but it wasn't just
one. Because I'd still be picking cotton under the original vision of America.
And it wasn't just one vision. You know, I mean, it varied. To give you a perfect idea, the right wing, the Tea Parties also embraced the Federalist in general.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to remind you, it was the Federalists who have some good points. But they are the ones who said, hey, we don't want to put the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. That's a definite no.
You know, it's funny.
That's why, in case you didn't know, that's why George Mason refused to sign the Constitution.
Right.
Because the Federalists said, we're not going to put the Bill of Rights in. The last thing we want is that kind of freedom for the people.
I actually see the Tea Partiers as much closer to the monarchists.
You
remember, most people don't realize the American Revolution was a civil war.
Yep.
We call it a revolution because the side that was revolting won. We call the Civil War a civil war because the side that was revolting lost. Had the South won, it would no doubt be called the Confederate Revolution. And had the Americans lost, it no doubt would be called the American Colonial Civil War. And then the British won. But clearly about a third of America was fiercely loyal to the king.
Yep.
About a third of America was fierce, believed in these ideals that the founders had. And then another third were kind of in the middle, kind of wanted the war to go away, kind of were toting up to whoever was controlling their power at the time, and really just wanted to avoid death, destruction, famine, and plague and disease.
So, how unusual.
But I do think the Tea Party is actually, they're much more like the monarchists, and I'll give you some examples. Look at the fact that they don't like the estate tax, right? This year in 2010, if you die with hundreds of millions of dollars, you can pass them on to your children, grandchildren, tax-free. Now, this is a Tea Party love. They love this. They love the idea of inherited wealth because they don't believe that working is particularly good. They like lazy, rich nobility, just like the English did. And if
the
you're a duke, a son of a duke, and a son of a son of an earl or a nobility, you can have all this landed property. They're called landed gentry. You never have to work for it. And, of course, that's a big Tea Party ideal, never having to work for a living and only having very, very rich uncles or grandfathers.
Well, the other thing is what you look at it with the far right agenda is going back to this, going back to a time, because right now, I mean, there's an argument over doing away with the Bush tax cuts, 2% of which go to the top. I mean, which most go to the top.
The 2%, majority go right. to the top 2%.
Right. And what's interesting about this is back during the colonial days, about 90-some% of the people were illiterate. They didn't basically know what was going on.
90 to 95%.
And the culture here, once again, it was like England. We didn't call them lords, and we didn't call them earls and dukes, et cetera, but there was a small, very wealthy aristocracy.
They used to be. Just to be clear, they used to have the lords and the dukes until the revolution.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
Lord Fairfax.
Right.
Come on.
Right. Exactly.
We had England here, and we had poor people. And you have people now who are, most of the Tea Party people aren't wealthy, who are arguing for that old culture of aristocracy, the old culture of privilege, of birth privilege. And sadly enough, they don't even realize it. But again, I think, in my opinion, what we really have to look at with the Tea Party is not what they say. I think you dig down to their motivations, and they are rather nefarious, and I don't think they have somewhere we disagree. I don't think they have a whole lot to do with politics and policy, in my opinion.
Well, they do and they don't. I mean, and I will give them that because we live in a time that's a little bit tense, shall we say. And frankly, they are frightened, as most Americans are. They're very concerned. They've lost faith in the government, which is the real tragedy that's going on. And that's one of the reasons that I personally, and that we're talking about this tonight, is in some ways by dealing with the truth to restore some reality and maybe even faith in our government, the flawed institution it is.
Right.
By pretending that this government is somehow some perfect, sacred thing that was created by these sacred men 200 years ago is absolute nonsense. Let me give you one other historical fact just to keep things in perspective. And again, this reflects back to the Tea Party movement and the fact that they're all packing heat and they go down to Williamsburg and they get involved in the militia and they parade and they pretend and they're forming militias all around the country. Well, I hate to tell them, I know they don't like this, I know they want to refute it, but the fact is the French won the American Revolutionary War.
Very true.
Period.
They were help.
No, Let's they not, won it. They can won it, and I can tell you exactly how they won it. They won it.
And
with
the Civil War?
Yeah. Well, almost.
A good portion
they
of the Civil
won
War.
It. You know, America was basically bankrupt. All the money was coming from England through the Netherlands, about $14 million in debt that we were to France. You know, they were sending over troops. But the main thing that happened was, we finally got Cornwallis cornered, right?
Yorktown.
That had nothing to do with George Washington. George Washington was trying to save face up in New York.
Well, the French fleet was surrounding, so he had nowhere to escape.
And was that Lafayette, I believe?
That was Lafayette.
Eventually.
Right.
Eventually. But it wasn't even him. It was Admiral de Grasse and the French fleet. And basically, Rochambeau, the French general, had to tell Washington, look, we're not going to come to New York and fight General Clinton there. We're not going to save
your... Washington was run out of New York.
Yeah, we're not going to save your face because you lost New York. We're going to only bring our fleet up for a short period of time from the West Indies, and we'll bring up as far as the Chesapeake, and we'll take on Cornwallis. And either you march down there to join us against Cornwallis, or we're not going to play. That's basically what happened. So the French fleet under Admiral de Grasse came there a month before Washington even got involved in this. I mean, they were marching from New York, but they weren't involved in it. And DeGrasse, with his huge fleet, one, defeated the English fleet down there, two, blockaded all access for Cornwallis, and three, continued the barrage and siege for over a month before the troops marched down there. And even when the troops marched down there, there were 17,000 fresh, new French troops. The Americans, as I pointed out in an article that I'm trying to get published, were deserting at the rate of 100 a week.
I have one
they
question.
They were worn out and
exhausted. Washington even had to kill a deserter.
The French won the battle down there.
I do have one question about the Tea Partiers in Williamsburg. Were they serving freedom fries because they hate France?
I know.
That's the ironic part about it. All of this, pro-founding fathers and, the Revolutionary War, rah-rah-rah, and they hate France.
Let me riff on something you said a few minutes ago, Terry, about how they're frightened. I think that's about the only word that you can say that really brings the Tea Party together. Because some of them are racist, it's true, some are not. Some of them hate the government, but then why do they love the Founding Fathers and the Constitution if they hate everything the Constitution stands for and they want to pack heat lest the government, the tyrannical government, take them and they want to be like, the British? Then the Founders' Constitution represents the British for them, and they represent the. In other words, they have completely convoluted philosophy. They have no coherent political philosophy. But the one thing you can say for sure about the Tea Partiers is they are frightened. Some of them are frightened of an African American president. Some of them are frightened of the socialists that are going to steal all their wealth. Even though, what does Barack Obama want to do? He wants to raise the tax rates on the top 2%, those that make over $250,000. From 36% to 39%, the same as it was in the Clinton years. Apparently that is Marxism and communism, and we need to revolt. And that, the colonists said taxation without representation. Well, the Tea Partiers have representation in government. They just don't like their representation. I can imagine if the colonialists back then said, taxation with the kind of representation that we want, even if we lose the election. It wouldn't be the same slogan.
And it was no consideration at all that the average person back then was going to get representation. That was not on
Parliament
the agenda.
Parliament wasn't
set up. Yeah.
In the United States, that wasn't on the agenda. And actually, it was just simply a war campaign thing to rally around, the same thing as the Tea Party is rallying around it then.
And actually, Mark, I would use a different word. I wouldn't say that their positions are convoluted. I would say they're conflicting.
They're contradictory.
And
they're
frankly ignorant. Right. And that's not an insult. That's the definition.
Which is another reason that I say, if your arguments are conflicting, then they're not real arguments.
No, that's why it's all fear. They're not real arguments. It's really
that's
fear.
That's why I say you have to dig down to what the Tea Party is about. And I just don't see. Here are people, even now, this very day, they've been making an argument that they got a problem with the deficit. They're upset with the deficit. The deficit has to come down. Now.
Except when we're giving all the money to rich people, then they support the
tax
deficit.
Cuts that they're supporting for the top 2% will add $750 billion to the deficit.
That's right.
Now, we have to filibuster $31 billion going to the,
unemployment.
Unemployment benefits. They're going to $31 billion. They got a problem because they're not paid for. Right. But
they want 20 times that amount to go to only 2% of Americans.
Right. So they're conflicting. They don't even make sense.
And just before we break for the half hour, which we're coming up in a little bit, we got about 5 minutes left. I want to digress a moment because, Mark, we're going to get right back to the study of history. And again, one of the points I'm trying to make is not only are the Tea Partiers, but frankly, the American public is ignorant of its own history.
Good point.
In fact, many scholars have said, and politicians from other countries have pointed out and said that the Americans are the most ignorant about their history of any group of people that they know.
Most don't even know how politics work today.
Something like 60% of college graduates said that the three branches of government are Congress, the presidency, and the military. College graduates. I mean, we're in trouble. Anyway. I can't help it. That's the way it is.
What was it? A quarter couldn't find the United States on a world map without boundaries? I mean, that was the one that really astonished me.
But if you remember, Mark, I hate to pick on you, but Mark...
Go right ahead.
Mark, you don't love to pick on him.
Let's
be honest, Terry.
I love to pick on you.
That's complete.
Okay, I love to pick on you.
Go ahead.
But you love to pick on me, so it's fair.
That's true.
Anyway, Mark forced me to make a bet. you know.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
A couple weeks ago. I win a dollar. Yeah.
Mark has been emailing me, you know, about every day saying, you owe me a dollar.
Absolutely. I was about to send some of the mob there to put a horse's head in your bed.
And the bet was, you know, that the Financial Reform Act would not pass before the elections.
No, it was actually Labor Day.
Labor Day,
you made me agree by Labor Day. Yeah. But I still won.
No. Okay, Terry, let's see you come
back. This is my second dollar.
For those of you who can't see, he's digging in his wallet
into his wallet. This is the second dollar. That's not a check.
Like a check.
Nobody uses checks anymore.
And look, it's a rubber
check. With a rubber band.
A Goodyear check.
What the heck? You're giving me a check for $1 with a rubber band attached?
I'm going to say it's for you, Mark. It's for you. Notice the date.
I want greenbacks.
Notice the date.
July 2012, no way.
Once the Financial Reform Act has any effect at all
on
the systemic.
You are changing the deal we made.
Hey, there's your dollar.
Changing the deal we made.
Terry's currently in a budget deficit, and so he's got to borrow the money from China.
That's fine. Right. I'll take the Chinese money. I'll take it in yuan. Yeah.
By the way, I want the rubber band back.
I want a full 100 pennies.
I mean, there'll be
a dollar charge for the use of the rubber band.
Yeah.
$1.50 handling charge for that dollar.
Just so people know, I bet Terry that Obama would get health care reform by, I think I said, what was it, the summer? I forgot when it was.
By June, I believe.
It was June. He did it with a month to spare. And then I bet Terry that President Obama would get financial reform done by Labor Day. I think I started with the end of the year, and then he raised it. He said, I want you to, can you do it by Labor Day? I said, yes, by Labor Day. President Obama succeeded in both his case, which shows that President Obama keeps his word. Terry DeKester doesn't keep his.
Hey, here's a dollar.
Dated 2012, sir.
It's perfectly good.
Terry, I don't remember. Mark's a lawyer. I don't remember a contract that said when you had to, you know, that you owed him a dollar, but he didn't say you couldn't write a check, and he didn't put a date on the check.
It could be in pesos. It could be in pennies. Right. It could be in cigarette butts. It does, you know, whatever it is. Oh, we've only got a little bit of time left. This is a perfectly good check. Yep. SunTrust Bank.
No.
Everything else there.
Change the date.
I promise I will have at least.
You know what? They'll probably take it. I don't know.
Hey, I mean, this is not the smallest check I've dealt with. I want to tell you this. I worked for United Airlines for a while, you know, a employee-owned airline. Part of my benefit after working there for a year and a half, I got 7 cents in a check. Seven cents from United Airlines. Don't tell me that capitalism isn't for the people. Hey, we're running out of time. We've got to take a break.
I'll sell you a credit derivative swap if you give me a real dollar.
Oh, gosh.
We're going to get back to history. We're going to get back to improving. Oh, we've got a little more time. So
back to history. No pun intended, of course.
In that case, just to make Mark happy, I will.
All right. Terry is a man of his word.
I'll hand it to him. There will be a $1 handling charge for that.
A dollar bill with George Washington.
Okay.
With the wig and everything.
Yeah, and you know, is that it? Okay, we got to take the break. This is Terry DeKester with Mark Levine and
Garland Nixon,
and this is the Raucous Caucus, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WPFW is your daily companion. While you listen at home, in your car, while running, walking, or exercising, maybe even on your computer, you rely on us for a thoughtful mix of music, news, and information, and we rely on you for support. Membership is our largest and most important source of income. Please fulfill your pledge today by calling 202-588-0999, extension 344. That's 202-588-0999, extension 344, or pledge online anytime at WPFW.org. Thanks.
Are back on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. We are the Raucous Caucus, and my colleagues, who I love, admire, and respect for their intelligence, their sagacity, and their cute legs, are
Garland Nixon.
And the only one showing his legs here, Mark.
Oh, you had to bring that up. Oh, for pity's sakes. Hey, anyway, we're down at Ben's.
There goes the hope of anybody coming down here down
right,
at Ben's next door.
That's right. Yeah. We are down here at Ben's next door, which is next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. We've got a great audience here tonight. You can come down and join us. There's still a little bit of room. There's lots of food and beverage. And we do, of course, have a mic here set up so that you can get into the conversation. The conversation is, now that we've given Mark his lousy $1, even though the Financial Reform Act won't do you or me any
That's
good.
That's two bets I won from you, Terry. Yeah, care to try me again?
Yeah. As soon as I get some health care, I can count on it.
It certainly appears to be financial reform for Mark over here. I thought.
Yeah.
You just have no faith in our president.
While
he's not perfect, he's at least good enough to get me $2, and I'm richer than I was.
There we go.
Well, if that's what it comes down to, I guess that's it. Anyway, we are discussing American history inspired by the article that was in the Washington Post about the Tea Partiers going down to Colonial Williamsburg, getting all excited by the distortion of history that they see, and not to burn any big bridges behind me, but trust me, Colonial Williamsburg does soften the picture, and they do play up to the militarism because, again, they have, as all Americans living history museums have, they have a product they have to sell.
Well,
that's it.
I'll tell you. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is that many people act today, they look at our government and they see the problems in our government, and they act like it's, you know, things have gotten really bad. And the reality is, if you look at the history of the United States government, in some ways, it's better now than it was in the past.
Sure.
If you go through the 1800s, if you know much about Tammany Hall in New York City and what was going on in Chicago, our government was bought and paid for, the robber barons. So
the Red Scare,
right,
and the McCarthy era,
right,
and of course the Civil War.
Right.
I mean, there's so many things I can name.
So if you really look at our government, while there's, Lord knows there's some issues right now, but in some ways there's probably more openness, more sunshine now. And it really hurts me to say this.
You're hurting me.
There's
you're
probably,
me.
If you really study it, more than there was in the past. It was way dirtier than it is now. It was just that, you know, nobody told us. You didn't know.
Probably the ugliest election in American history was the 1800 election between two of the founders, Adams and Jefferson. They were
nasty.
Accusing each other of treason. President Adams actually had a sedition act. If you spoke against his administration, he put you in jail. First Amendment, be damned. There was some severe tension between Adams and Jefferson, and you know what? They were both our founders. And they actually made up. But for a while, they were bitter.
But you got to ignore all the things Jefferson said about church and state.
Yeah, and I'll tell you.
I like those things.
No, we've got to ignore all of those. If
Let
you're
me tell you another.
Member, they don't
amazing,
know.
An amazing,
the rest of his stuff was all good.
By the way, just because most people don't know, a wall of separation between church and state is from Thomas Jefferson. Those are his words. So if you don't like it, Tea Partier, go study your history.
Well, that's the thing we're trying to encourage him to do. So, give you another fact that very, very, very few people know, and it's certainly not broadcast in Mount Vernon, and I simply discovered it by accident. I performed as George Washington's secretary and aide-de-camp for a number of years.
Did you take dictation from George?
I did.
Okay.
In fact, I thought you were George Washington.
No. I was just thanks a lot, Garland.
No, that was when he was young.
Hey, I've earned this gray hair. But anyway, one of the amazing facts is Thomas Jefferson and George Washington didn't get along either. And in
King
fact,
George?
They got into such a big hassle and argument that his secretaries were afraid that Washington and or Jefferson were going to challenge one or the other to a duel. Now, this is historical fact. You don't hear this. These united founding fathers, right? Uh-uh, not united. They finally, again, a little bit reconciled, as you pointed out, with Adams. Jefferson actually wrote to Washington and tried to, you know, smooth things out. There's no record that Washington ever wrote back to Jefferson and tried to smooth things out.
And, of course, Aaron Burr, who was part of the Democratic Republicans, got in a real duel with Alexander Hamilton and mortally injured him.
Which is all part of the whole story there with Jefferson as well, because Hamilton and Jefferson were totally opposed to each other.
And later Aaron Burr committed treason. So we had some great founders there.
I think it is
not
important.
Not to mention Benedict Arnold.
Not only to, you know, bring up a little scandal and gossip, but to understand how convoluted our history is.
Did you know Alexander Hamilton had a sex scandal? Do you know about this?
Yep.
Alexander yep. Hamilton was, although he was married, he was sleeping with the wife of another married of a married man, and he was paying off the man. Actually, very similar to what Nevada Senator, the Republican.
What was his name?
I forgot his name. But the current Hecht, I think. Anyway, the current, a different one. Anyway, the current Republican senator from Nevada was doing. Anyway, but George Washington decided this was a private matter. And Hamilton told him about it, and he gave him a pass. He said, you know what you do in your private life? Apparently, George Washington would have given Bill Clinton a pass as well.
Yep. Well, you know, another thing is, when we look at this, and again, you know, there are those who would say, oh, you guys hate America and you're trash the founding fathers. I think it's this. I think what is important is to look at things through, you know, instead of these, you know, glasses that so everything back there was perfect and everything they did
gods,
was perfect.
They were humans.
So, yes, to look back and say the things that were going on weren't perfect. All the decisions that were made weren't perfect. Everything wasn't perfect. So the idea of the Tea Party and the far right people, that the far right wing people, that we can just point back to the founding fathers for everything that supports us.
Right.
And say, well, this happened or this was said or done by the founding fathers, so it has to be perfect, is ridiculous because they ignore the things that they don't that they wouldn't
it's
like or don't agree with them.
You're exactly right, and that's a big important point. Anybody, whether it's on terms, whether it's Scalia or it's the Tea Partiers, you know, they are very selective in their originalism on what's going on. Yeah, the heck with the Constitution. Select the part you like and don't like. Ignore the history. Ignore the precedent. Ignore the complexity. Another historical fact I want to give you, and again, you know, just to encourage you to study this, if you look at it realistically, what created, produced the United States of America begins back in the 1770s easily, actually goes back to the English Civil War, progresses steadily through the 1770s all the way up through the 1860s. A recognizable America that you and I would recognize did not exist until after the Civil War.
Right. I would argue really it wasn't after the New Deal that we got
the real America. Yeah.
Or the Civil Rights era. I mean, you know, each event, the 30s changed America, the 60s changed America, Teddy Roosevelt changed America.
It's one basic war that's going on all this time. The war begins with, you know, Spain, France, and England. They're fighting over what? Resources. Where are those resources located? The United States of America.
We were
and the point, we had the oil.
Exactly.
The tobacco.
The point that Mark just made was brilliant in that he, you know, what he said was, this country is a growing, changing
place. It is a perfectible place.
Women could vote, then African Americans could vote, then different things happened, then we had, you know, Medicare and this and that. That things have been growing, and that the idea that we can go back, you know, it's kind of like Osama bin Laden, who wants to, like, take the whole Middle East back to the 5th century or the Taliban.
Right.
It's the mentality that the way forward is to go backwards.
Yeah.
Look backwards, and that'll take us forward. It's the same type of Taliban thinking that we have in the far-right evangelicals here. Find out where we want
to
be.
That's an enormous thing to say, and I'm going to ask you to repeat it in terms of the Tea Party. You're comparing the Tea Partiers to the Taliban.
Yeah, yes.
And that's legitimate.
Yeah, it is. There's people who are saying the way forward is to look back. Yeah. Well, the founding fathers back in the 1700s did this. That's the way we ought to do it. As bin Laden of the Taliban says, well, back in the 5th century and the 6th century, this is what we did, as people who are extremists tend to do.
Well, let me defend, if I can, a little bit, the Constitution. Because
you don't have to defend the Constitution.
No.
We do kind of like it.
But,
you know,
but my favorite part
when
about
we use it.
I teach the Constitution.
Well, in the preamble, it says, form a more perfect union. We wasn't perfect then.
Union, not confederacy. Let's remember that.
It was something that become more and more perfect over time. And, of course, the best part about it is it has amendments that allow it to change, to get rid of the 3/5 clause, to give women the right to vote, to give former slaves the right to vote, to become a more perfect union. But the thing about it is that, you know, there's always a tension between the past and the present. And I got to say, people use the Constitution a lot of times like religious people use the Bible. You take anything you like, and then you read it into these words, or you read it into the Bible. I can't tell how many times people comment on
my
website,
and
they'll tell me they don't like healthcare law. It's unconstitutional. Or they don't like Barack Obama's taxes. They're unconstitutional. It's like, no, you just don't like them.
Right.
And if you don't like them, that's fine. It's democracy. Tell me you don't like them. But to call something unconstitutional means it has to violate a specific provision of the Constitution. And since you haven't named one, obviously you don't know what you're talking about. So my point is not to diss everything the founders did or as you know, 5th century, 7th century.
In fact, just the opposite.
But to recognize that parts of it are are truths that we hold self-evident, right?
Right.
All people are created equal.
Which is not in the Constitution.
Which is in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, which is not
the
part of our canon of law.
Talks about equal protection under the law. The point is that what the best government does is we save the best from the past, discard the worst from the past, and keep adding on and on and on. That means that I respect words said in 1787 and said in 1791 and said in the 1830s and said in the 1910s and said in the 1930s and 60s. The point is, take the best, discard the worst, move forward. Progress, if you will.
And I would say this.
We've got a mic here, too. Yeah. If you've got some questions about history, I think we have some pretty good knowledge up here.
Or to challenge
or
us.
Or if you have a challenge, you know. Also, and we are at Ben's next door, and there's still time to get in here and join in the fray. Garland.
And I would say to the Tea Party members, the percentage that doesn't like the idea of an African-American president, they can blame...
They won't say openly.
No, they won't. But whatever percentage it is, people can argue about that. I would say to them, they can blame the founding fathers. I mean, come on. All men are created equal. How do you think that would turn out?
They didn't say all white men.
It had to come back and bite you in the behind.
They didn't say all white men. In fact, the word white is not in the Constitution.
Nowhere.
Nowhere's there.
You know, the real point that we're trying to make here is some people think, you know, we're saying things against America or against the Constitution.
Which we do, don't get me wrong.
Well, when it's necessary, yes. But, you know, the point is, if you are a patriot, Lord, I hate the overuse of that word, but if you are a patriot, then it behooves you to study the history of the United States with an open mind. And that means study the complexity, study the contradictions, study where it's right, where it's wrong, where it's flawed, where it's good.
Well, we've got words of wisdom
coming.
But
the last thing you can do is just say, oh, it's this way or that way. It's not that easy.
Up at the mic now was our guest
all right,
host
we have a guest
from last
here.
Week.
Yes.
He's in the house and he's got something to say. Hello, Silas.
He's back. Oh no. Don't say anything about military power.
Silas O'Quinn.
Hey, right. Silas.
So I have a question for each of you.
Okay.
How would you define a patriot?
Great question.
Can I do that first? Because this is important. And that is a great question. A great question for this reason. There are two words. Patriotism and nationalism. And
we've talked about
right,
this.
And that's where the far right, the Tea Party is blurred. Patriotism can be a good thing. Nationalism ain't a good thing. And I would say the Patriots are the ultra-nationalists. But I think that's the line when you go from patriotism...
So how do you define it, Garland?
Patriotism, patriotism, I'd say, is to love and be proud of your country, your culture, etc., not to the exclusion of others, not to the anger or belittling, and not in an arrogant fashion.
I like that definition. I'm going to add to it that a true patriot recognizes where their country is at fault and strives to improve it. That if you are a blind nationalist, then right. you love that's love my country or leave it.
Right.
But a patriot works to improve their nation because they love their country. And if you're not a patriot, then you might leave it and give up on it. But a true patriot never gives up on their country and always works to make it better.
Yeah, and I would define a patriot, you know, much the same as Garland and Mark have said. But a patriot is, frankly, a skeptic to begin with that can, you know, appreciate his country for a lot of reasons.
Or her.
You know, but at the same time, be prepared to look at it and question what is going on, how it arrived, how it got there. Again, it's a you know, you can't, in my opinion, be a patriot unless you are involved educationally.
And let me add,
and I do mean educationally, because it's a very, you know, this is a complex world and a complex country and a complex civilization. It requires some study to participate. And if you're not willing to make that study, then I question your patriotism.
And there's one other thing I got to add. Loving your country and looking at your country is like loving yourself in that you're part of the country. But number one, in order to improve as an individual, we have to do a lot of self-evaluation.
I got a list right here about Garland.
Yeah,
and Mark.
But we have to be able to look at ourselves. We have to be able to independently understand what our problems and weaknesses are and try to improve them. It's just a big, you know, being a patriot is looking at the country just like you should look at yourself. Now, I would argue that people who can't look at the country and find the faults and the things they, you know, they need to improve most likely can't look at themselves and do the same thing.
I want to quickly quote, believe it or not, John Kerry. And I think he was quoting someone else. I don't think he made this up. But he said this in 2004, and I've always remembered it. He said, do not say love your country right or wrong. Love your country when it's right. And when it's wrong, work to make it right. Yep. And I firmly believe that's my definition of patriotism.
Silas, your thoughts? Closer to the mic.
I would agree with most of those definitions, but I would also say that a patriot would also be willing to defend their country.
Oh, well, of course. Absolutely.
But even with that, that you've got to evaluate, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean...
Well, when you say defend, do you mean physically? Yeah. Do you mean...
World War II. You know, World War II is a perfect...
But even then, you have to look at it objectively and historically. You know, defend it for what reason? Just because something is happening somewhere else in the world? Just because you happen to need a lot of oil so you can, you know, fuel SUVs?
Well, hold on. Silas, when you say defend, what are you saying?
Meaning that the principles that this country was founded on.
I agree with that.
You believe in those so much that you'd be willing to
lay even
your
die
life
for
on
them.
The line to defend those principles.
I disagree with you, and I'll tell you why I disagree with
you. We may disagree on the principles.
Yeah. We may disagree on the principles, and the principles have varying interpretations. But more important to me, I think we so overplay this idea of patriotism. You know, to me, a school teacher who is working hard is a patriot. To me, a doctor, a dentist who's working hard is a patriot. To me, a parents who care about their kids and are trying to help them are patriots. To put this patriotism in this narrow little category of defending.
I don't think so either.
I'm saying this because it is used by the Tea Parties. It is used
by, that's not how Silas
uses it. It is used by the politicians again and again and again. Every citizen of America who serves this country in one way or another can be a patriot.
Let me say this, it doesn't mean having to go to war. And I don't think he's
it
saying,
doesn't mean that.
And I don't think he's saying to the exclusion of all those things. But I'll put it like this: if there was some country coming across the border to attack the United States,
Canada,
they just might. I think they will. Yeah, they'll come over here with hockey sticks to beat us all to death. But if that's the case. But realistically speaking, I think what he's saying is fair and reasonable. I mean, look at World War II when you had the issues going on there, that it was certainly fair and reasonable for people to figure if we don't do what we need to do to defend this country, then this bad guy's going to run everything. So given the circumstances that are reasonable, I certainly think that he's right.
Let me say this. Silas said defend the principles, even willing to die for the principles to make up America. One of the things that I think makes America unique and why I am patriotic and why I'm very proud of the United States of America is that we are a country founded on an idea. That's very rare. The vast majority of lands around the world, the French, well, they all speak French and they're all of the French people. The Germans, the same. The English, the same. The Italians, the same. You know, the same is true. You can go to the Hutus and the Tutsis. Go all over the world, Japanese, Chinese. You find people that are tied together by force of the same language or religion or culture.
Yeah, I think that's simplistic, America, but go ahead.
No, I think there is no greater
melting
pot.
That's not true of France. It's not true of Spain.
France is far more monolithic than the United States. Yeah. So is England. Uh-huh. So is Spain. The United States, I think, has the greatest diversity and melting pot on Earth. And I think the reason is because people come from all over the world. They fight to get in the United States. They try to get in here because we are a country founded on an ideal. An ideal of liberty and law, constitutional law and protection, democracy, that other countries who fear religious persecution or economic troubles, they come to America precisely because we're not of one ethnic group the way that they often are in Europe, Africa, Asia, South America, and everywhere else on
Earth. I think you make a big mistake, Mark. I eschew any time we're talking in that superb...
Because I'm tight.
I got a shoe right here. Right. I got two shoes.
You know, anytime we talk in those gross superlatives... Greatest country in the world, best or whatever. I don't believe in those words. There are
is there a country that's as diverse as the United States anywhere around the world?
There are better and lesser, but best is an almost an impossible thing.
Fine.
To
how about realize. How about most diverse?
More diverce, yes.
I don't know of any country with as many peoples of all around the globe.
How about if it's just a great place? We don't necessarily have to compare ourselves to other people.
Yeah, that's the problem.
It's just a great place to live, but we don't have to,
better off than
anybody else. And the point is to be an American.
Turn off that mic. Kill it. Kill it. I mean, he's out of control.
Cut him off.
Just kill it there.
He's out of here.
Where's my flag pin?
Yep, okay. Yep. You know, if you've traveled a little bit, and I know you have, you know, what you find out, any civilization you go into or any neighborhood in America, for that matter, has something of value in it. And my position is to learn what every society, group of people, religion, neighborhood, nation has of value and respect that. The same is true of America. I do not believe in better or best. You know, it's just a, that's a divisive statement as
that's
far
fine.
As I'm concerned.
I'm not, yeah, I don't need to say better or best. I can say that one of the things that makes me most proud about my country
is the melting pot.
Is the melting pot.
I agree.
That I see as pretty unique to America. Right. I mean, there are Canada has a bit of one. Some of the other Americans, like Brazil, I think some in the New World, because all the indigenous people.
You know, but even other. I mean, talk about England, Irish, Welsh. I mean, if you think Scotch.
Don't you think there's a little more diversity in America than among the English, the Irish, the Welsh, and the Scotch?
Go up and tell a Scot. Go up and tell a Scotsman that.
I would argue that there's more difference among American people than the Scotch.
I worked in Scotland when they happened to be creating their own parliament. Trust me, there are Scots who are still ready, and I do mean ready, to go to war to separate themselves from England. And as you know, there certainly are Irish. The only ones who have really calmed down completely are probably the Welsh.
But that's the difference. We embrace it. We go and eat Chinese food, and we listen to jazz, right? And then we go to a
And then we exclude Latinos as much as we possibly can.
Well, most of us don't.
And
the Tea Partiers might.
And create
But to me,
laws.
That's what makes them anti-American. Yes, I said it. Anti-American.
Yes.
To exclude any group of people from the American dream is the ultimate in being anti-American.
Which brings up an interesting point. You say exclude from the American dream. If you exclude from the American dream people economically, if you exclude them economically...
That's anti-American, too.
That's
Absolutely.
Anti-American,
Well, and
too.
Here's the other thing.
You know, and that's part of our big problem, and it's still going on.
And the thing is, like I said, it's a great place to live. I love America, and I think it's reasonable for... It's a place where you can sit down and discuss and argue the points and things like this. But
on WPFW, yeah,
particularly, well, only on PFW because we're not taking all of the corporate money.
Yeah.
But I think that... We have to. What one of the problems is, you know, we look at the American dream, which is only economically based. That's the only real problem I have with the American dream. It's economic. The American dream is you can make this amount of money or that amount of money. I was at this guy's house today. Well, I won't mention, but he was from another culture. But what's interesting is when I left his house, he's trying to hand me a soda or water or something. I said, I don't go. He says, you have to take it. And I said, why? He says, in my country, in my culture, whenever someone comes to visit, you have to give them something. You have to give them some kind of a gift or something when they leave to show your appreciation for them. And I thought, what a beautiful thing. You know, I wish our
culture... That's common in lots of cultures.
Yeah. So I thought...
Would argue that's in both Southern and Jewish culture, frankly.
Yeah, there are a lot of
that's
cultures.
That's my mom. You can't go to her house without getting a drink. That's
and that's
sure.
a beautiful thing. And that's why I say, you know, when we say the greatest, the problem is it causes us to look at ours and not be able to appreciate some of the really beautiful things in other cultures. And just say, we have a great culture. But there are some cultures around the world that have things that I wish we had, and we would be better if we had. But, you know, that doesn't mean we're not good, but... Oh, wait a minute.
And
we have some real wisdom here.
You're on.
For a change.
Join us at the microphone.
Hello. How's everybody?
Wonderful.
We're fine. And your name?
Sheva.
Sheva? Hi, Sheva.
All right.
All right. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
I just had a question. Do you think the reason that Americans... I hear that a lot. Like, we don't learn about other people's cultures. We're very, like, ignorant. Whenever we go across the seas, why don't you speak English? Like, we don't really take the time to get to know... anything outside of our own life. Do you think a lot of that is because most of us were ripped away from our homelands? It's like we don't have that history to look back on, like other cultures. When they come from their native land, they can trace their lineage. A lot of us can't, especially African Americans. Do you think that that's the reason?
That's a very interesting point.
I tell you,
that's a very interesting point.
I think two things. Number one thing that's always affected America realistically is geographics, and that is we're far away from a lot of areas and we're kind of isolated. And
two oceans help.
Yeah. But also, I think the kind of feeling, you know, that we're at the top of the hill causes that. The belief that we're at the top of the hill, which economically we're at the top of the hill, but I think, you know, go ahead, Mark.
And just in defense of Americans, I lived in Switzerland.
You don't have to defend Americans.
Well,
we're in agreement here.
No, hold on. I lived in Switzerland for a year.
Other than Terry, you have to defend Terry.
Thank you.
I don't really like that guy. I don't trust him.
Frankly, I thought the Swiss would be so much more educated, so much more knowledgeable about the world than we were. They were provincial, too. And I frankly surprised me because I thought, well, it's an international country. It's in the middle of Europe. And, yeah, they know a little bit about the cultures of the countries around them. But they don't know that much about the rest of the world.
Well, but that's an interesting point.
The point is, a lot of – it's not just Americans. A lot of people, a lot of human beings are provincial. A lot of Chinese people don't know much outside of China. And the same is true in virtually every nation on Earth, including ours. So while I wish we would learn more, and we should, I guess I'd say to Sheva that – I think that if you go around the world, you find a lot of people just don't know much outside their surroundings.
Well, the other thing about in America is this. A lot of people, there are a lot of areas, if you travel around America, where people don't know a lot outside of their general area. You know, yeah. Outside of the cities and towns and the general area they
although
live in.
There's more movement in America than, frankly, for example, I just saw a study, far more than in Europe, for example. People are much more likely to move from New York to Nebraska to
thank
Montana
you, General Motors.
Than they are from England
oh,
to
there
Spain.
You have it.
Yeah, looking for a job
yeah.
now. Most
well, that's
time
right. That's
job.
Exactly right. yeah. Looking for a job. Right. We are more united, certainly, than European countries or African countries or Asian countries.
But, you know, you bring up an important point, and I think it goes back. I mean, one, Shiva, I think you've got a good point. I mean, I had the privilege of a couple years back or a year or so back of being in Greece. Now, there's history, you know. Now, the strange thing is Greece has only been secure as a nation for the last 40 years or so, and right now it's in economic turmoil, you know. But at the same time, there is a Greek identity and pride that is almost enviable. I mean, it truly is. One, because they've been through so much. I can't quite say it. Thank you. But the point that you make that I think is so important is what we're really saying about America is, you know, it's composed of human beings, and the founding people were just human
with
beings.
With the exception of the Tea Party.
Even including the Tea Party.
No, I'm just joking.
You know,
and I love the Tea Party people. They're my friends.
There is no one group of people that I've met on this planet, and I doubt that you have met, that is better than another group of people. The only question is, what are you offering people in terms of opportunity and possibility? Now, we state the American dream, but if you want a better education, you better hope you're in Germany. You're going to get a much better education in Germany than you're going to get in the United States.
I would
States.
Argue that jazz musicians are a superior intellect above us all.
They may well, be. They may be. I might agree with you there.
Let me press on just real quick. Something yeah. Shiva said, though, because she talked about losing the culture of our ancestors. One of the great things I think about America is that you can have both. You can be African-American, you can be Jewish-American, you can be German-American, you can be Irish, or you can keep your old culture and its food and its language and its religion. You can keep the religion from your old country. You can be Muslim, you can be Buddhist, whatever, and you can also be American. And I think that too many countries, and this is, frankly, France is one of them, where they're requiring Muslim women they can't wear
their headdress.
Hijab. One of the great things is that you can be both, and that's why actually, instead of melting pot, which was the old term 100 years ago, I don't know if it was Jesse Jackson, but there were others talking about a mosaic.
Mosaic.
And that's a much better way, I think, to describe American identity, where we're all pieces coming together.
But that's a right-left argument also, you know, the cultural diversity argument. That's a right-left mosaic.
That's what makes us strong.
Yeah. It is what makes us strong. I mean, it's an overused cliche, but it's a far better cliche than referring to the founding fathers who were not united. Silas, you moved up again. Don't tell me you've gone. We've only got about 2 minutes, but join us quickly.
In the American dream. I've heard that thrown around a lot, but what is the American dream?
In my mind, the American dream is the belief that every single American, whether poor or rich or black or white or male or female or gay or straight or whatever religion, every American who works hard and plays by the rules has a chance to achieve great success. That, to me, is the American dream, and it can only come with some real basics like healthcare, education, shelter, food, things like that, because otherwise you can't achieve the American
dream. And I would say this. It's a dream that we work towards.
It's an ideal that we work towards.
It's certainly we don't have.
Many
it's
don't
not
achieve.
Real.
It's, many I mean, don't it's achieve. Not the reality but it's, now. It's an ideal.
But we keep moving towards
your
it.
View, Silas.
My question was, you made a comment about economics being tied to that. I don't understand.
Well, we've
the American dream is often
we're running out of time.
We'll do that next time.
We've got to thank some people.
We've only got about a minute left. We've got to thank some people here. Let me do that first. We want to thank first Drew Franklin over here.
Let's hear Drew,
the man
on the board, on the ones and twos, as they say in DJ world.
And, of course, our wonderful producer here who's saying, hurry up, Terry.
The queen of quality.
And Drew Franklin and Sidrack Franklin back on the board. Hello, Sidrack back there. And Ben's next door.
All right.
Nizam, man. And, of course, our great audience, thank you so much for being here and joining us all on the Raucous Caucus.
You can Facebook us
at the Raucous Caucus. I'm sorry, WPFW Raucous Caucus.
And also
Facebook.
Individually you can find
and
us.
And also raucouscaucus@gmail.com. If you reach us through that, it links to everything else that we get, or it should. And if it doesn't, let us know, and we'll make sure it does. We're out of time here. This is
Mark Levine.
Christmas Addicts. Garland Nixon.
And Terry D. Kessler. And yes, Mark did get his lousy dollar back. Let's hear it for
all
America.
Right. All right.